If any script writer would write what happened in October 7th, we will all like say it's like a very cheap horror movie and no one will watch it because it's too unreal and surreal. But the flip side of how the unimaginable becomes imaginable is when we see people who never believe they have the capacity, the strength, the motivation, the energy to step up, to step out and do incredible things, incredible positive things.
Welcome back to What Gives, the Jewish Philanthropy Podcast. From the Jewish Founders Network, I'm your host, Andres Pokoiny. After the unthinkable events of October 7 and the subsequent crisis in Israel, we made a decision to suspend the podcast so that we could better focus on Israel's recovery. Now, we are resuming our work on What Gives, sharing with you expert knowledge in the field of Jewish philanthropy. We felt it appropriate to transition back into the show by sharing some of the powerful messages presented at the 2024 JFN International Conference, which we held recently in Israel. This week, we bring you a message of adaptability and care from Yotam Politzer. Yotam is the CEO of Israel, Israel's leading humanitarian organization. Since its founding in 2001, Israel has sent help through disaster relief, medical assistance, and post-traumatic care to countries all over the world. On October 7, the organization found itself needed at home. Yotam was joined on stage by Professor Nava Levit-Binun to speak to the JFN conference about conflict, care, and turning traumatic stress into traumatic growth. This podcast will continue to explore the evolving landscape of Jewish philanthropy, now unavoidably shaped by the new and enduring challenges we face as a global Jewish community. So let's begin. I hope this mini-series from the JFN conference resonates with all of us in these trying times. So take a listen.
Hello, Yotam.
Hi, Nava. Hi, everyone. Shalom.
I want to say, first of all, that it's an honor for me to be with a person like Yotam on stage. I think it's very rare to find people that do the opposite of what most of us do. When there's a catastrophe or crisis, usually we run away. And Yotam, from very young age, is the type of person that goes into the crisis and the catastrophe and is agreeing to be a bear witness of the suffering and the tragedy and be of service. So I want to extend a deep bow of gratitude to all the things you're doing. And in this...
Thank you. And next time, Andres, please invite my mom.
And also to all of you for all the things that you are doing with your organizations to bring more hope in these dark times. As a researcher, you know, I come with this curiosity and understanding that we really need to learn from these rare experiences that people like you have about how societies can grow and how is Israel society and the whole Jewish world can grow and even become a better version after the really difficult times, the dark times that we're experiencing right now. Maybe we can start with you like giving us this like picture in the head of something that you have seen in your eyes. Like, where have you been? What have you seen? Just a few examples.
Yeah. So thank you, Nava and everyone for being here. I don't think just, you know, as Israelis, we don't take it for granted. So thank you for everything you did and for coming here. So Israel has been working in 64 countries for the last 23 years, responding to disasters, never in Israel until October 7th. So in a way, I feel like everything we did for the last 23 years prepared us for this moment when the crisis is at home. I personally started my humanitarian career after the tsunami in Japan. When I arrived to Fukushima 4 days after the tsunami, where 20,000 people lost their lives, the tsunami was unimaginable. It was a 40 meters, 120-foot wave of tsunami that washed away everything there, including the nuclear plant, which created another disaster. And after 3 years in Japan, I went to the Ebola outbreak, which always good to put COVID in perspective, because when I landed in West Africa in Sierra Leone in September 2014, the survival rate was 50%. So that was quite scary. And then after things were a little bit better there, I moved to the earthquake in Nepal in 2015, where 10,000 people lost their lives and about 1 million people lost their homes. And we were very lucky to actually find the last survivors of the earthquake, who was a woman who was trapped under the rubble for 6 days without food or water. And then in the summer of 2015, I worked with Syrian refugees who escaped Syria to Turkey and then to Greece. And the two kind of last mission that I was very involved with some of the people who are sitting in this room was a rescue mission from Afghanistan of 205 girls from the hands of the Taliban. Thank you. And of course, in Ukraine. And actually, the last disaster that Israel, and it seems like 10 years ago, but it was literally in last September, just before our own disaster here, was the earthquake in Morocco, where we sent a team there. So we have seen some stuff in our life.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So you have seen, you have been in places where there's a lot of loss and death. And also I think this unexpected disasters, usually it's also unexpected. And what I want to learn from you, what we also I think want to learn from you, is what would you say is like the common features or phenomena that you see in people experiencing these kind of things?
So I think something that we all, I'm sure everyone in this room, myself included, felt on October 7th, but I've seen it time and time again, is first of all, this feeling of helplessness. This feeling that this is something bigger than us, something that, of course, we couldn't imagine in our worst nightmares. And this helplessness. And what do we do? And that leads, of course, to the freeze, flight, or fight response. Freezing, literally freezing. Flying away physically or psychologically. And fighting back. And of course, in the case of October 7th, we have seen so many people fighting back literally, jumping on ambulances and pulling out people from the Nova Festival. But also we've seen other types of fighting back, like Haredi mothers cooking for soldiers, or the hundreds of thousands, probably millions of volunteers in all the control rooms and the evacuation centers. So we've seen that everywhere around the world whenever there's a crisis. And basically what we always see is that the unimaginable becomes imaginable. And that has two sides to it. First, of course, the horrific scenes that, you know, if any script writer would write what happened in October 7th, we will all like say it's like a very cheap horror movie and no one will watch it because it's too unreal and surreal. But the flip side of how the unimaginable becomes imaginable is when we see people who never believe they have the capacity, the strength, the motivation, the energy to step up, to step out and do incredible things, incredible positive things. And I think that's partially related because this feels existential. This feels like something that really shakes our core belief.
It's like they're looking for the meaning of things and meaning of life.
Right.
And so it's, I want to highlight a few things here that really helped me as a neuroscientist spending about 15 years trying to cultivate all kinds of positive qualities of mind here in Israeli society. And it's so, so difficult to change mindsets. And here you were saying the unimaginable becomes imaginable. When our brain maps don't understand what's happening, that's where plasticity comes in and things can shift. You said the need to fight the helplessness, the search for meaning. I think this really helps understand the great forces of motivation and energy and shift in mindset that we saw that really caused all these regular people, right, to emerge as heroes and heroines and do things that were unimaginable, both for themselves. They didn't imagine they had these abilities, and also unimaginable before the pre-crisis reality. So all these heroes and heroines, that's one of the conditions we need.
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely seen a lot of heroes. I mean, the whole country, and I'm sure we've heard it and seen it in so many places. During this conference, this hero mentality, our whole language in Israel now is about heroism. We're giving the hero award, and it's amazing, and it's incredible. But, and this is very important, this is something that
Let's
we actually...
And.
And. And. I think the hero mentality and the hero mindset is not enough. I can tell you that for us at Israel, the whole organization is started from being these Michigan Israelis jumping on planes whenever there's a crisis somewhere in the world. And it's a very much the hero mentality and, you know, including in places that you never heard of, that I never heard of, like Haiti or Vanuatu, where we always first on the ground. But also, it's not enough. It's really important not just to be first on the ground. It's important to think long term. So now, after many years and a lot of experience, we are not just calling ourselves we are the ones that are first in, but we are the ones that are last out. Mm. So I think the time is very important. So for us now, an average project that we do, no matter where we are in the world, is a minimum of 5 years.
What do you do in all these years?
So you shift. So you shift the mindset. You shift from this immediate relief mentality to much more building bridges, mentorship, strengthening local capacity, finding local resources that we can partner with. I mean, I think you can see this shift starting to happen now in Israel. We definitely had a lot of heroes, but we're not there yet.
What does, from your experience, what happens if, when you go to these places and you don't do the shift, what would happen to the societies there?
I think, first of all, people are burned out. People are really burned out. And we've seen it a lot.
And we know from brain science that burnout goes to depression.
Yeah. And also we can't help, right? Mm. So many people post October 7 left everything and started to volunteer in different ways and forms. But we know that it's not sustainable. We know that there's a limit to how much you can live your life and you can forget about putting food on your table. And a lot of people were burned out. A lot of people were burned out. I remember that my personal experience was that we do a lot of work around psychological support and trauma. And we know that the most important thing about psychological support and trauma is to do it continuously for a long time. Mm. So I actually had to fight with people who wanted to volunteer. I fought with them so they would get paid. And I really literally got into a fight with therapists who wanted to volunteer and was not willing to get paid. But then, so they can do it long term.
What else happens to societies when there's no shift from the hero mindset?
I just think it's really not sustainable, and it's not really building the communities, and it's not really, I mean, we see it a lot. For us, the cue is when we see that the aid packages, you know, I always joke that a lot of people after October 7, but actually after every crisis, a lot of people are sending their grandmother socks as a donation, which is very nice. But we started seeing these aid packages of grandmother socks all over the place piling up. And the local community creates a lot of dependency. And that's the opposite of what we want.
So there's a shift of agency from the community to the rescuers, to the heroes. And it's really interesting because I think that Western society in general, but maybe when you think about the Jewish history, Israel, even from the Bible until to the history of Israel, we have so many heroes, so many stories about heroes. And you're talking here now about another mindset that it's really crucial. And that's a mindset that when we were discussing, I suggested that we call it a wise elder mindset, which is more like a mindset of a healer, of a connector, of a supporter, of a mentor that comes to service. And it's a completely different energy and different cognitive state even, right? Because the mindset of a hero, I would say, is urgency. It needs a lot of energy. It needs a lot of courage. It doesn't have time to pause and stop and try to look at what are the resources because you need to rescue. And then the elder has like more time to sit in the chair and maybe like take a pause and look at the bigger perspective and start seeing the different partners and the different players and connecting between them and trying to think of building bridges and thinking maybe to the future, maybe even a few generations. Like someone said here before, gathering information, gathering data. So you're bringing in this mindset. Do you feel that, I think we all agree we have a lot of heroes, amazing heroes. And without these heroes,
We wouldn't be here.
But do you think we have enough elders?
No. I really don't think we have enough elders in Israel in general. Maybe it's not our Israeli character to think like that. We always think in urgency. We always think in this hero's terminology. And I think that's actually something very, very important to focus on for an organization like ours. But of course, for everyone in this room, I think... And actually, I do think that we just spoke about it, the two of us before, that in a way, I think the concept behind JFN and coming together and learning from each other and building partnership here is sort of an elder mentality, which is unfortunately quite rare.
Yeah, because elders, in Israel, that's what they do. They understand that the whole is connected, that is created of parts. And if you connect them, then the whole is greater than its parts, right? So this is what JFN is trying to do.
Yeah. And again, I think we've seen it time and time again. I can tell you, in October 7, we do a lot of work with the kibbutzim. And actually, you know, the kibbutzim are this very traditional Zionist who are used to doing everything for themselves. And I'm very concerned because what I see in a lot of the evacuation center, in the temporary housing where they're building, they got used to receive a lot of things and to less do for themselves. And I really see this shift, this mindset shift that we have to do with these communities if we really want to help them recover and continue dealing with these challenges that we're still dealing with, right? It's also the question about the day after. A lot of people are asking me what, you know, I know a lot of people here in this room thinking about the day after, but I think for some people, the day after is now. And so some people it will be next year, and for some people it will be in 5 years. So this day after thinking, the long-term thinking and change in mentality is something that really has to happen on all levels.
Yeah, this is one of the things that I'm really interested in, this elder mindset, because as a neuroscientist, this cognitive metacognition that's required, which is not something that, you know, that is you born with. Sometimes you need to really cultivate it. It's this ability to see systems, to see how things are connected, to be able to understand what are the distinctions you're making and what are your distinctions you're missing, and maybe they're important, and what are the relationship between things, and what are the perspectives, the different perspectives we need to take. And sometimes it's not easy to take these perspectives.
I also think. Sorry to jump into your words, an Israeli, but what. What my life has, my journey in all these disasters was always about looking into how these terrible tragedies and crises could turn into opportunities. Mm-hmm. And usually whenever we are, I think, in a crisis outside of Israel, we think with this mindset immediately. Mm-hmm. Here, the trauma and the pain was so personal. Mm-hmm. For all of us. I mean, we all are connected in directly or indirectly, but we all still feel the pain. And I think it took me personally about 3 months to step out of this and be able to see.
That's what the FFF reaction, the stress response, it takes us out of this metacognition, and we need to, you know, actively bring back this metacognitive abilities. So what would you say about the funders in their role? Would you say that more mindset, hero mindset or elder mindset? And I want to take a second maybe and ask all the people here to just like take a moment to look inside and ask yourself, am I more in a hero mindset now, more in a elder mindset, maybe somewhere in between? And just before your Tom will give us the answer, what he thinks we should be in.
Yeah, I mean, I think the heroes are important. I mean, we wouldn't be here without the heroes. In the case of October 7, I think it's very clear that we wouldn't be here without the heroes who protect us in Gaza or in the northern border, and the heroes who saved so many and continue to save. So we need the heroes, but that's maybe our comfort zone, mm-hmm. which is kind of surreal to think that our comfort zone is being heroes, but that's really who we are as Israelis. And what we desperately need right now is this elder mentality on all levels of society, including the government, the civil society, and very, very importantly, the philanthropic community. So I think what's happening here is an elder mm-hmm. conference, an elder in a good way. It doesn't mean you're old, guys. although I feel very old because I always say that every day at Israel equals to 4 normal days of a normal person. But really, I honestly think the elder mindset is the key for long-term recovery.
Yeah, I think you're an elder, and it's really nice to talk to an elder. And I think that we can maybe summarize and really say that this shift into elder mindset is something to think about. It's something to cultivate. You know, we build our realities with our minds, with the models of our minds. So the mindsets that we come to the world is crucial to the realities we will be building. And you were talking about, you know, that this just unimaginable becoming imaginable, and an opportunity, I would say, brain plasticity to come in and help shift things so we can actually create the realities from this responsible point of view that's so needed. So yeah. You say your last sentence, I say mine.
So I heard I was quoted yesterday, so it's definitely not my turn, but the concept of post-traumatic growth, PTG, is, I think, the opportunity we have here, and that's where we should all be focusing our efforts on. And I want to thank you, all of you, for being heroes with us and for helping us becoming more elders.
And may all these efforts lead to growth, healing, and hope.